And good morning. It's now 8:06. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, filling in for Leslie Thatcher this week. And now it is snowing in Old Town Park City, and joining us on the phone for a weather update is ABC4 meteorologist Thomas Giboy. Good morning to you.
And good morning, and happy Friday Eve as well. Just the roller coaster that we're on with our weather in Park City just continues. And for today, we do have that chance for snow showers out. It's going to be sticking around. We got some energy coming in from the northwest, and we'll likely see a decent amount of snow showers as we continue through today. And then also, to go on top with the chance for a few snow showers, we'll also have the chance for a few thunderstorms. So that chance can't be ruled out either. And if we do see a thunderstorm, obviously we could pick up some accumulations rather quickly. And I've been looking at some of the cameras around Parley Summit. It definitely looks a little bit snowy and some slushy conditions out there. So be careful on that early morning drive. By the time we get into the second half of the afternoon into this evening, though, the chance for snow showers will begin to go down. High pressure will briefly build back in. So after a daytime high of 34 degrees this afternoon, we'll drop to 21 degrees tonight with calmer conditions tonight. But then, of course, we got another system that's going to be arriving tomorrow, and we'll be looking at a pretty good chance for snow showers once again, about a 2 in 3 chance for our Friday with a daytime high climbing to 39 degrees in Park City. And then high pressure will finally establish itself as we go into this weekend. So Friday night's going to be chilly. The chance for snow showers will gradually go down. I'm thinking on Saturday we'll be looking at partly cloudy to mostly cloudy skies and the Wasatch back. And with that high pressure that's going to be establishing, we'll see those temperatures finally go back on a warming trend. We'll be back in the low 40s on Saturday, partly cloudy skies on Saturday night as we drop to 25 degrees. And on Sunday, mostly sunny skies, a daytime high climbing to 51. So it's actually going to be pretty nice as we go throughout this weekend. But of course, we know we can't get used to the calm conditions because they won't be lasting. By Monday of next week, we'll likely be talking about our next system moving in, but with temperatures that are expected to be in the low 50s for those daytime highs on Monday, we actually could see rain before we see the chance for snow showers by the second half of Monday, possibly into our Tuesday as well. So by Tuesday, the daytime high drops back into the 40s, and overnight on Tuesday night, the low temperature dropping into the 20s, but by the middle of next week, looks like we should see some sunshine with high temperatures in the 50s. So we have some wet weather for today and for tomorrow, mostly dry over the weekend. Temperatures will be warming by this weekend. Then another system comes in on Monday, then dry by the middle of next week. So the up and down with our weather in Park City just keeps on keeping on.
Wow, bipolar weather. Does it seem like all we do anymore, Thomas, is talk about the weather?
It seems like that's the topic of conversation, that's for sure. But I mean, at least we'll get a nice weekend. We got that going for us.
That's right. Well, thank you very much. Have a great day.
You too.
Thomas Giboy with ABC4's weather update. Looking ahead this hour, we are waiting for a call from the Utah Avalanche Center. But if they don't call in, we actually are speaking with a couple members from the Utah Avalanche Center during Cool Science Radio, giving us a really in-depth look at the science of snowpack. This hour, we'll talk with Summit County Council member Tanya Hansen. So the council met yesterday, and she will be recapping that meeting. DWR, the Division of Wildlife, Public Information Officer Faith Heaton joins at 8:30. She'll talk about how to help with wildlife in honor of Earth Day. Then at 8:45, Katie Wang, the director of the Park City Film Series, will join to preview what's going on in the upcoming film and community events and some really exciting remodel there at the Jim Santee involving those seats. So stay tuned to find out more. In local news now, Governor Spencer Cox visited Park City High School on Wednesday. Between conversations about the ups and downs of student life, he offered advice and addressed those who wore LGBTQ support symbols. KPCW's Ben Lassiter was there and has this report.
The day and the alternative was early dismissal. Five students on a panel each asked him a question. Those touched on restricting library books, inflation, the future of sports and the Olympics in Utah, and abstinence-based sex education. Some students told Cox they didn't believe the people in charge in Utah listened to young people on some issues. He fist-bumped Chloe Terrell, who was one of three students on stage wearing rainbow armbands. She asked him about Senate Bill 16, which the legislature passed this year along party lines and which Cox signed into law. SB 16 banned transgender surgeries, hormone medication, and other forms of gender-affirming health care. Cox said the legislature is listening. Before the legislative session, he said lawmakers met with transgender youth about laws that would affect them and that such input had meaning.
So, again, didn't turn out the way you wanted to, and the way some of you wanted to. But my point is, because we had those voices at the table when it was happening, there were changes that were made.
He said legislators changed the bill from a permanent ban to a temporary measure pending more research, and is an example of the legislature listening to young people. Some students in the crowd held flags in support of the LGBTQ plus communities. Near the stage, one sign showed statistics about the high rate of transgender youth who have contemplated or attempted suicide, and the sharp drop in that number when access to hormone therapy is available. The holder of that sign, a student named Hayden, said the governor's words alone didn't convince him pro-transgender legislation is on the way in the future.
He's saying these things that I think are good, but that he's doing the exact opposite with the legislature.
Hayden also said meetings like those between lawmakers and transgender youth should be standard practice with communities affected by laws. Jacqueline Vasquez asked for Cox's thoughts on recent laws that empower parents to challenge books in school curricula, which she said has happened in books about minority and LGBTQ characters and by minority and LGBTQ plus authors disproportionately. Cox said such laws are still new and not intended to target any specific groups, and more debate on the topic will lead to the best outcome in the future. Much of Cox's message to Park City High School echoed his speech to Wasatch High School students earlier in the day. He encouraged them to engage in causes they're passionate about and focus on their learning habits, work ethic, and tolerance of people they disagree with while in high school. He also said Utah has the best teachers it's ever had. The visit was part of an initiative the governor began last month to visit all of Utah's 29 counties and meet with students, residents, and business owners. Ben Lassiter, KPCW News.
Well, in local news, former Ukrainian President Viktor Yushchenko was in Idaho this week after visiting with business and government leaders here in Utah. He spoke with the Mountain West News Bureau's Murphy Woodhouse after an address to a packed Boise State University auditorium on Tuesday. Here's that report.
Yushchenko, who survived a 2004 poisoning before becoming the country's third president, thanked the rapt audience for the solidarity that many Americans have shown Ukraine since Russia's February 2022 invasion. He highlighted the work of aid groups like Idaho-based To Ukraine with Love. He spoke through translator Marina Antonova.
The goal of my trip is to have meetings with wider public, with business community, with business leaders several states in the United States.
He also shared how he thinks peace should be achieved in the 14-month conflict.
I have a very simple formula for peace in Ukraine. What is peace in Ukraine?
Peace in Ukraine is
victory of Ukraine and its allies in this war over Russia.
He advocated for Russian President Vladimir Putin and other leaders to be tried in an international court proceeding akin to the Nuremberg trials, which he says could prevent another similar invasion. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Murphy Woodhouse.
Well, the Summit County Council met yesterday, and here with a recap is Councilmember Tanya Hansen. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
Well, quite a bit to talk about. One of the big things you did was interview and then appoint planning commissioners for the Eastern Summit County Planning Commission. So three seats were vacated at the end of February on that planning commission. You reappointed two of those people, Bill Wild and Marion Wheaton. What made the council confident in those two?
Well, both of those two, and in fact, I served with both of those two on the Eastern Summit County Planning Commission when I was on that commission. And, you know, they've both had been on there for two terms, which is 6 years. They've dedicated a lot of time to that. They've got a lot of history and information, and they've just served us very, very well. So we felt that it was appropriate to reappoint them. And then we had one open seat. Tom Clyde did not reapply, so his position was open. Right. And we interviewed two folks, one from Camas and one from Colville, and both of them were great candidates. And we decided to go ahead with David Darcy from Camas and appointed him on that extra seat.
Now, isn't David Darcy a Camas City Council member?
He is, and he's also on the RAP Tax Committee. So he's a very busy man, and he's retired. He feels like he's got the time to dedicate to public service. And we felt like you know, he would be a great representative. The one thing that I look at is Tom Clyde is from the South Summit area. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I like to see a balanced commission and where people are from. So it made a lot of sense to me to replace that seat with someone else who was from the South Summit area.
Right. Now, does this mean that David Darcy will have to step down from the Camas City Council now if he indeed takes that appointment? And I suppose he did.
No, he does not. And we discussed that if there was a conflict of interest, and we didn't see that as a conflict of interest because, you know, Camas is a municipality. They have their own planning commission for the municipality. So this is a county representation. And we asked him about that, if there'd be a conflict of interest. And he, his thoughts were if there were, he would recuse himself from Camas City, anything to do with development that might become an issue.
Okay. Well, certainly he's already quite informed, as you say, and with all the time that he has, obviously, that's why you appointed him. He'll make a good addition to the Planning Commission. Now, one of the items that you spend a lot of time on is the wrap-up of the legislative session. It's a briefing from your lobbyists and county staff. There are so many bills to keep track of, and it's pretty impressive the amount of work that county staff and the lobbyists do, so probably around 100 bills or so. Do you have a sense for how much time and work is taken for the county to, you know, to keep tabs on the session, which now has been over for a while, but it shows that the briefing, you know, just yesterday, it takes a lot of time to wrap up, summarize, and decipher everything that went on.
Well, we were informed yesterday that it was a record-breaking number of bills that the legislature looked at. Over 900 bills were introduced on Capitol Hill this year. And 535 of them passed. And the county watched closely over 300 bills that might impact us. Let's see how much time it takes. Well, here's just a snapshot. Each Monday during the session, the county's internal legislative working group, along with our lobbyists, meet to discuss bills and strategies. And that's pretty much all of the elected officials, the transportation director, county manager, deputy manager, sustainability. I mean, the list goes on of the number of people involved in every Monday looking at these bills. And then each Thursday during the session, a delegation from Summit County attends UAC, and they look at possible bills and raise questions and concerns and, again, advocate for the county. So that's Monday and Thursday. And then every Wednesday during this period, staff comes to the county council and updates us regarding bills that the county is tracking and monitoring. So to your question, it takes a ton of time. Those 45 days are just jam-packed and people really working hard to make sure we're watching what's going on that might impact the county.
And Tanya, for you, what were the most, the bills that came out that really will have the most impact? Of course, Senate Bill 84 regarding Dakota Pacific, that goes without saying is a big one. But what were, you know, one or two of the other most salient points that came out of the legislative session for you?
Well, you know, last night our presentation took over 2 hours to look at many of these bills. You know, there were several that are going to impact behavioral health. There are several that are impacting economic development, housing, and land use. Several that will impact the county clerk regarding voting and new things that she'll have to implement around voter signature verification and things like that. House Bill 84, you know, our favorite bill, of course, and I say that tongue in cheek, was the bill that got, you know, a lot of our attention and time during the session. And that's the bill that was at the last second substitutes provisions that give certain development rights to a developer in Summit County. So we all know what that means. Yeah. The other one, and let me look at this, I've got notes here, was House Bill 174. And House Bill 174 is a transportation bill and I'm screening through trying to find it. And it's effective January 1st of 24, and that requires $2 of each registration fee to be transferred to a newly created Rural Transportation Infrastructure Fund. And that will be adjusted annually, and the fund will be $40 million. With $6 million ongoing. And this was every Class B and C road for Class B and C road maintenance. And Summit County was the only third class county exempt from this bill. So, you know, Summit County felt a lot of heartache during this session, of bills that were concerning to us. So those were my two big takeaways, 84 and 174.
Right. Interesting. And, you know, as always, between Summit County and Park City, we're constantly trying to improve relationships on the Hill. And your staff suggested getting involved with this year's meetings of interim committees. How do you go about that? And then what is the ultimate benefit of doing that other than being just ultimately very informed?
Well, the interim sessions occur late spring and throughout the summer months. The Utah legislature meets once a month in joint committees between House representatives and the Senate. Our lobbyists will be very involved in watching what these discussions are. These meetings are to study policies, state codes, and issues that are likely to be addressed through the legislation during the next general session. I personally am trying to move forward and in conjunction with our lobbyists and other council members to meet with lobbyists to meet with legislatures during this interim session to form relationships. Because right now, for me personally, if there's something going on, I really don't have a relationship with a legislature that I could call and go, hey, you know, what about Summit County? Have you thought about this? So I really want to formulate some relationships, get to know some of those legislatures, and maybe they'll understand the county, Summit County, a little better if we have some good working relationships. So that's my personal goal.
Okay. Well, moving on to everyone's topic of the day, which is flooding. We had Mike Lors in here yesterday talking about the importance of not having your sump pump plumbed into your sewer system. And the reason for that is it impedes the treatment at the water treatment facility. Is the county doing anything to, you know, check or enforce those things? Or are you leaving it all up to Snyderville Basin Reclamation?
You know, Lynn, this is the first I've heard of that. So I really don't have much to say about that. I'm uninformed. I would think it would be up to the water district.
Yes.
I haven't heard from the health department or anyone else on that. I can tell you that there's a lot of groundwater flooding going on in Camas Valley.
Yes.
In Francis. A lot of sump pumps are being sold at Home Depot right now. But I haven't heard anything about it plumbing into your home.
Okay. Yes, I was at Home Depot just last night with a friend buying a sump pump, and it was like one of those, you know, skits you see on Saturday Night Live where they're, you know, pulling back and forth, arguing over the last sump pump remaining. not quite that dramatic, but certainly. And how is the county doing on flood mitigation and sandbags and all of the resources that both you and residents can use to help mitigate their own flooding?
Well, there's a lot of sand and sandbags throughout the county that Summit County is distributing. You know, all of the cities and municipalities have sand and sandbags, and we're doing, I think there's an information on KPCW actually that informs the citizens about sandbags. And we're just watching it closely with our emergency management team and trying to communicate with the public and really trying to make them aware of, you know, what the possibility is ahead with this weather. So we're being very proactive and working diligently to inform and provide services to the citizens of Summit County.
Because you live on the east side, Tanya, and I haven't been out into the Camas Valley recently since this flooding started, what does it, you know, what is it like? I feel like it's flooding out there more than it is here in Park City, with maybe the exception of Silver Springs. Are you seeing just nothing but water all over the ag land?
Yes, all over the ag land. Really, you know, the term flooding, we're not seeing the flooding from the rivers and streams yet. Mm-hmm. They're doing a really good job letting water out of all of the dams, and trying to help mitigate allowing the water that's going to run off into those dams. But what we're seeing is the groundwater. The ground is so saturated, and these fields are melting, and now the snow is melting and coming into those fields. You know, the dirt just can't absorb it anymore. It's just got too much water in it. Last week in Camas and Francis, there was, you could call it a flood, but basically it was groundwater that was just oozing up and moving the snow. I spoke with the mayor of Camas, and he said it was incredible. It was just, the water wasn't running off. It was like coming out of the ground and the snow melt, and it was just moving water everywhere. So really, that's the problem right now, is the high groundwater.
Yeah, it's interesting when, in essence, our runoff has, you know, barely begun in earnest, and the groundwater is already that high. So lots of news.
Yeah, we're really trying to get the ditch companies on the east side of the county to make sure their ditches are cleaned out, mm-hmm. and that their culverts are cleaned out to kind of help move this water along where it should go. But yeah, there's a lot of groundwater right now.
Right. Also, you attended the Council of Governments meeting with the mayors of Summit County cities. What did you talk about? What did you hear from the other mayors? I suppose a lot of focus on flooding and the runoff and things like that, but was there anything else?
Yeah, a lot of conversation from the mayors about the runoff and the water. And we had the EMT presentation. You know, the county hired a consultant group, and they've studied the EMT situation throughout the county, and they presented to the COG group, and the COG group is you know, the mayors and the county getting together. So that, and it's not the final version of the EMT study, it's the initial version of the EMT study. So we looked at that and discussed that, and you know, how we're going to move that along. We expect the final version of that the end of May, which will allow for a lot more conversation.
Okay, there was some mention of sewer expansions. What is that, and why? Mm-hmm. Why are expansions so problematic?
You know, it's interesting. I've been attending all the Eastern Summit County City Council meetings recently, and in every meeting I've attended, except for Oakley, and I still need to attend theirs, there's been discussion about development, approval of developments, water, and sewer systems. And you know, in Colville and Camas, due to upcoming development, they are going to have to expand their sewer systems. Now, are they going to do it tomorrow? Probably not, but they're looking out into the future to see how they're going to handle all this future development, and they're all going to need expansions. Well, at least Camas and Colville are. Francis feels pretty good about theirs right now. Well, we did talk about it in Hennifer, but that's what's going on with their sewer expansions, is development, upcoming development.
Mm-hmm. A lot more discussion on that in the future, I'm certain.
Indeed.
Yes. Tanya, anything else you wanted to mention?
Yes, a couple of things, other things that happened. One thing I really want to call out is we had a proclamation recognizing Jean Paskett. Mm-hmm. And Jean has worked 29 years of public service for the citizens of Summit County. She's worked in the health department for 29 years, and she's finally decided to retire, and she's done a great job, Jean has. We also had a proclamation declaring April 9th through 15th as National Animal Control and Care Appreciation Week. And lastly, but not least, we had two young ladies from the Park City School District, Chloe Turnell and Bailey Kamrak, and they brought in a proclamation declaring April as Child Abuse Prevention Month. Hmm. So we approved all of those proclamations, and that was really great, especially, you know, Jean, after 29 years, she's been great for Summit County.
Those proclamations.
So it was a really good.
Yeah, they tend to be the most fun and touching parts of the meetings, don't they?
They really do. And those young ladies from the high school, they were great, too. So, yeah, that was a nice way to finish up our meeting yesterday, is with those proclamations.
All right. Well, Tanya, thank you for your report.
Thank you so much, and have a great day.
You too. And that was Tanya Hansen, Summit County Council member. Just a quick mention about backups on I-80 eastbound. There's a bad traffic eastbound on I-80. It's backed up from Kimball Junction all the way to Summit Park. And there's also backups going all the way on I-80 westbound going toward US 40. So take some extra time out there. I'm not sure if this is traffic or some slippery roads out there. It is snowing lightly in Old Town, and I know it's been snowing out in Kimball Junction area. So be careful, be patient, be tolerant, and you'll get to your destination. We'll be right back in just a moment. We'll be speaking with the DWR Public Information Officer Faith Heaton Jolly on how to help with wildlife in honor of Earth Day when we return. It's now 8:35. Good morning. Well, Utah's home to many wildlife species and spectacular landscapes, as we know. And Saturday, April 22nd, is Earth Day. It makes it a great time to reflect on the ways we can help restore and preserve nature, including fish and wildlife and their habitats. Joining me now on the phone is the Division of Wildlife Resources Public Information Officer Faith Heaton Jolly, and she will let us know more. Good morning to you, Faith.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for joining us. This is a great way to tie wildlife into Earth Day because, of course, our natural habitat is all part of it, and the natural habitat keeps the wildlife healthy or not. So let's start with, as the snow melts, we see a lot of garbage out there. And this is a huge impact, has a huge impact on wildlife. Tell us more.
Yeah, so like you said, we're just kind of highlighting a few different ways people can help wildlife. Most of these are really simple, easy ways. And this one probably should be a no-brainer for people. But yeah, just basically reducing your litter and trash can go a long way in helping wildlife. Sometimes our wildlife, we've seen, will eat, you know, paper, plastic, food pieces that have been left in campgrounds or on the side of the road, things like that. And it can cause some digestive issues, which can potentially be fatal for some of these species. So just people, if they're throwing trash and food scraps out of their car, it can also attract more wildlife to the side of the road, which in turn can increase the likelihood of vehicle wildlife collisions, which obviously isn't good for people or for wildlife. And then just kind of the one you see a lot, you know, in commercial TV, fish and wildlife can also get caught entangled in trash and other debris, which can impact their ability to eat or move, which obviously can also kill them. So just a few small things, you know, and it just looks better as well, right? If you're out enjoying nature and the outdoors, you don't want to see a lot of trash and garbage and litter. So, you know, it's better for the environment, but it's also better for these wildlife if you just pick up after yourself, you know, leave no trace when you're out recreating, and it goes a long way in helping.
And after such what I think has been an extremely windy winter, I think there's a lot of unintentional trash out there, plastic bags that have blown. So everyone, I think, I don't know anyone who actually throws litter out of their car, but I think there's unintentional litter. We can all do our part by just picking it up if you see it. Let's move.
And that's a great tip. Yeah. Take a trash bag when you're out camping or hiking and do your part. Yeah.
That's right. Now, one of the things you say is to report reptile, amphibian, and bird sightings. And there are a couple of apps that do that. Tell us more. So this is about an app and a website that you can record sightings of various wildlife.
Yes. So specifically, some of these are for reporting some of our different amphibians and reptiles and also birds. So as you know, there's a ton of wildlife out there. We're consistently doing what we can to monitor and kind of record where those species are located, get an idea on population numbers so that we can better help them. But obviously we can't be everywhere all at once, right? We have a limited number of staff. So these are ways that we kind of involve the community and people that are kind of, you know, maybe bird watchers or are kind of interested in some of these things to help us report what you're seeing on the landscapes as well. So iNaturalist is an app, and actually this is an app and a website, and you can honestly report a variety of different things, plants, insects, wildlife species. And like I said, in particular, we ask people to report reptiles and amphibians. There's a specific group, Herps of Utah, but it basically lets you record the location data, photos. We can also help you identify some of these species if you aren't sure what it is. But that really goes a long way, like I said, in providing helpful data for us to monitor and manage these native species. Some of them are seen very rarely. They're only active different times of the day, certain parts of the year. So it really helps us kind of get more information about their distribution across the state. And then, like I mentioned with birds, there's a couple of different ways you can help with some of these bird counts. eBird is a popular app that you can kind of report some of these sightings year-round. We also help with the Christmas bird count. It's a big nationwide kind of bird count each year from December to January. And then Project Feeder Watch is another one where you can go on and report kind of just what you're seeing at your bird feeders. And that, like I said, really helps us kind of gain information on how these species are doing, where they're located, so we can go about doing projects to improve their habitat in these specific areas when needed.
Well, this winter, of course, with the huge snowpack, I did hear some people saying that they were sort of going against that protocol of not feeding the wildlife and leaving some, I don't know what kind of food. It seems like people sort of looked it up and wanted to do the right thing and left food out for wildlife in their backyards or whatever. I know the DWR really discourages this. Can you tell us more? And then also about your emergency deer feeding protocols.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, this is kind of our third tip, is don't feed wildlife. We know it's tempting, and like you said, especially with this winter, where in particular our deer and elk and some of our big game animals were really struggling to find their natural food sources because there was just so much snow covering it. It is really discouraged, and there's a few reasons why. One is just those public safety concerns. If you're putting out hay or different feed in your backyard, it's going to be drawing these animals to that area. And that can increase traffic, you know, vehicle collisions. And we've honestly just seen sometimes these animals will get aggressive, especially around dogs. We've had some dogs get gored. Some people have been injured. Like, it's just in general, there's public safety reasons that you don't want to draw wildlife to your area. They are wild animals, after all. There's another factor that's been pretty serious, is there's also the potential of spreading disease when you're unnecessarily congregating animals into one spot. So we do have chronic wasting disease here in the state that impacts our deer, elk, and moose. And we've really been trying to monitor that. And when we did implement some of our emergency deer feeding, it was only in places that we don't have chronic wasting disease, because it is really contagious. It can transfer through saliva, things like this. So if you're feeding a big group, it can be transferred that way. We also have avian influenza right now that's kind of nationwide been spreading, and we have it throughout Utah as well, that's impacting our waterfowl and raptors. That is a fatal disease as well. And so we don't, again, it's highly contagious. So we're not wanting to unnecessarily congregate some of these animals. And then, like you'd kind of mentioned, there is also the potential to do more harm than good if you're feeding wildlife something that's not normally in their diet, especially during the winter months. Our deer kind of switch to a completely different diet. So hay can actually kill them sometimes because they're just not able to digest it. So like I said, I mean, we did enact some of these emergency deer feeding protocols where it was, you know, these areas that didn't have chronic wasting disease. We had that really extreme snowfall, and our deer just kind of had those below average body fat conditions that they need to survive the winter. It's pretty rare that we do this. It has to kind of meet certain requirements for us to be able to enact some of these, but we followed our policies. And with this, I mean, I don't feel like I should have to say this, but, you know, we do have trained professionals. We use a specialized feed that is appropriate for their diet. So that, I mean, like I said, it's still not recommended for the public to feed the wildlife. We know that they have good intentions, but a lot of times it really can just end up doing more harm than good.
Yes, absolutely. Well, one other thing that you talk about is light pollution and really paying attention not only to the light and sort of the reflection, anything that might make a bird fly into your window. It's always heartbreaking when that happens. But what does light pollution do in terms of, you know, leaving a lot of outside lights on and even inside lights to either the migration or just the health of wildlife?
Yeah, so this is one that people maybe don't even think about. And again, such an easy thing you can do to help some of our bird species. So birds are migrating at different times of the year. A lot of their migrations will happen during kind of the early spring and then again in the fall. And a lot of them actually migrate mostly at night when it's dark. So one way, like I said, to help them is to turn off your outdoor lights at night, because some of that light pollution can actually disorient birds and draw them off of their course from where they're trying to head to get food and shelter. And sometimes it can actually cause collision with some of these lighted buildings and other structures. We've seen this winter in particular, we had some eared grebes that will do some of these migrations, and they always need to land in water. And because there were some lights on in different parking lot areas in southern Utah, and it was icy and, you know, snow that was kind of reflecting that, well, they thought it was water. So they basically crashed into some of these parking lots in southern Utah. So again, just some of these issues can be resolved if people will turn off their lights, kind of be cognizant of that. Artificial light has also been known to impact frogs and other animals during breeding season. So kind of being aware of that, making sure that you're turning off your lights can really help some of these species.
Absolutely. There are a few more suggestions. I'm out of time, however. So where can folks go to find out more?
Yeah, so if you want to know other ways that you can help wildlife, you can visit our website, wildlife.utah.gov.
Okay. Faith Heaton-Jolly, DWR's Public Information Officer. Thank you so much for joining us, Faith, and happy spring.
Thanks so much. Yeah, thanks to you.
Okay, bye-bye. Joining me now on the phone is Katie Wang from the Park City Film Series, joining to preview what's going on in upcoming film and community events, and starting with one this evening. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning, Lynn. Great to be here.
Great to have you. So circularity is a new word for a lot of folks, but tell us what it means and what you're going to be doing tonight.
Well, as many folks are probably aware, we have Earth Day coming up on Saturday. So as part of our annual programming, we always like to partner with some of our local nonprofits. And in this case, the Swanner Preserve and Eco Center has been a longtime partner with us for Earth Day to show films that really get into environmental conservation topics a little bit deeper, take that conversation kind of to the next level. So the film this evening is called Going Circular. It is a free event. And this film introduces the concept of circularity, which is an economic system that eliminates waste and conserves the planet's finite resources. So if you're familiar with Cradle to Cradle design, this is kind of the next level of that. And the film is really fascinating in that it uses case studies around food, urban environments, our financial system, the fashion industry, to really, you know, illustrate how circularity works and how you can design products and systems so that there is no waste, right? If you look at nature as a model, there is no waste in nature, right? Like, there's always some link in the chain that connects to the other one. So kind of bringing that concept into the human environment is quite fascinating. And we'll have a post-film discussion, of course, as we always do, to kind of get deeper into that with experts in outdoor product design, urban food systems, ecological planning and design, and living buildings. So we're really excited to kind of get into the meat of this subject tonight, and hope folks will come out and join us for that.
A great thing to do on a kind of snowy evening. And I wanted to mention...
Spring-ish,
right. I wanted to mention that the amount of work that you all do to put together these post-film discussions, panels, is really incredible. And of course, people like me who like to leave right at the end of the movie because I'm already half asleep, are really missing out. So if you go to one of these community screenings on Thursday evenings, make sure you stay for the post-discussion. You have another one coming up on April 27th, and I initially was wondering if Stranger at the Gate is a documentary or fiction, but I think most of your Thursday night screenings are documentaries, right?
Yes. Yep. They typically end up being documentaries. So Stranger at the Gate, which is next Thursday, so a week from now on the 27th, was actually nominated for Best Documentary Short Film. And this is interesting for us. We normally program feature-length films, so, you know, 60 minutes or more. But we're trying a new concept here, if you will. So for folks like you that might leave at the end, they're like, I gotta go. It's only so much time that I can spend. So the film is 30 minutes, and Malala Yousafzai is one of the producers. And this is one of the, like, the most, I mean, it's just so deeply moving when you see this film. I saw it at Mountain Film last year at Telluride. It's about a former U.S. Marine who plans to bomb a mosque in his small Midwestern town. And his plans are diverted when he comes face to face with the people that he plans to kill. And it is an unbelievable story, true story, of just grace, transformation, redemption. Mm. I mean, you would not believe. I mean, it's just kind of those truth is stranger than fiction type stories. And we're really excited that we have the director, Josh Seftel, who will join us after the film, along with the subject, the former U.S. Marine, Mac McKinney. They'll join us via Zoom for a Q&A. And here's, like, the new bit, right, is that it's a short film conversation. That's kind of the normal status quo. But then we partner with Mountain Mediation to facilitate small group discussions afterwards. So to focus a little bit more intensely on some of the themes of the film and how do we bring some of the lessons learned and some of the revelations from the film back to our own community? How do we kind of get a little deeper into bridging divides, overcoming hate? How do we recognize the humanity in people that we think are perhaps our enemies, but really, you know, find out that there's more that we have in common than we do have different? So it's part of our Raising Voices film series, which is a new program for us this year. Then we get support from Park City Municipal Corp as part of our special services contract with them and the Park City Chamber to really elevate and showcase communities and conversations that are traditionally not represented in the arts. So it's kind of a new journey for us. We're just trying this different format and see how it works. Again, short film, but, you know, it'll be a two-hour evening, which people are normally expecting, but with a lot of information and activity kind of packed into that time. So that'll be next week's special presentation.
So tonight, Going Circular, that's a cradle design for Earth Day. And next Thursday, so April 27th, a week from today, is that Stranger at the Gate. Again, it's an Academy Award nominated film. It sounds really incredible. Both films followed by these panel discussions and an opportunity next week to get involved and interact a bit as well. Heading into your weekend film screenings that are taking place now through May 14th, when you start this remodel that I'm pretty excited to talk about, what are your ticket prices this season?
So ticket prices have stayed the same for us. We have, I think in our 28-year history, raised ticket prices maybe twice. And the last time was about 9 years ago when I started. But ticket prices are $8 for general admission, $7 for students and seniors. And if you're a member of Park City Film, they're $6. But our Thursday night screenings are typically free thanks to our grant supporters. Summit County Rap Tax is supporting the film this evening. So we're very grateful to our supporters for helping us make these films free and accessible to all members of our community.
And films begin at what time?
Friday and Saturday at 7, and then again Sunday at 6. And then this weekend kind of is our second half of Earth Day as we go into that conversation. So Going Circular tonight, kind of get into Cradle to Cradle and circularity. We have the winner of the Grand Jury Prize at the 2022 Sundance Film Festival, which is also, and then also nominated for an Academy Award for Best Documentary. And this is the film, a documentary called All That Breathes. And it's the story of two brothers who are living in one of the world's most populated cities who've devoted their lives to protecting the black kite, which is a bird of prey that's really essential to New Delhi's ecosystem. As we think about circularity, kind of where do things go? They're scavengers. So where do they fit in that food chain? And it's just this mesmerizing film about interspecies coexistence set against the backdrop of just, you know, environmental toxicity in New Delhi. I mean, just such a highly polluted city, social unrest that was going on at the time. And it's just one of those films that people fell in love with at Sundance, clearly, since it won the Grand Jury Prize and then, you know, got the Academy nod this year as well. So to kind of bookend what we have going on for Earth Day, really want to get deeper into that conversation and bring these great films to our screen.
You can fall in love with the film just by looking at the cover photo of the trailer with one of the brothers staring into the face of the black kite, the bird. It's pretty incredible. So good, great trailer as well. Okay, well, wonderful. Always something to watch at Park City Film Series. And you will go from now through May 14th, will be your last day, and closed from May 15th through June 8th to replace the seats in the Jim Sandy yes. Auditorium. I think everyone's yes. doing a collective yeehaw over that. So what are you going to be doing?
So this is, as you said, a long time in coming. The seats were last replaced in 2003, so it's been a while. And this is only the second time ever in the history of the Jim Santee Auditorium, which was built in 1928, that the seats have ever been replaced. But we are closing the theater. We are completely replacing the seats. But not only, but we're not just replacing, replicating what we have. We're improving sight lines and increasing accessibility while we have this opportunity. So we'll have 6 wheelchair spots in the theater, a total of 22 transfer arms, or those arms that kind of flip up, strategically placed around the theater. Because what we heard from some of the users of the theater, which include the director of Crip Camp, Jim Labreck, local film lover Chris Waddell, Stan Clausen from Art Access, that there are different parts of the theater. Because of the way our theater is constructed, all of our wheelchair spots have to be in the front where the floor is flat. But, you know, the best place to sit in the theater, if you're a director, is in the way the sound is designed, is right in the center, right? Like right in the heart. So when Jim came here to see his film during Sundance, he's like, I want to sit in the middle. Like, I don't want to sit in the front. And so Sundance kindly shared that information, that feedback with us. And so we've created more transfer arms on the center aisles so that folks, if they're able to, can transfer from their wheelchairs into those spots. Or if you have other mobility issues, just make it a little bit easier to access those seats. We'll also have them on the side aisle and towards the back. Just give people more opportunity to sit where they want to sit where they feel it's the best place to experience the film. All film lovers will probably agree that everyone's got their own special spot that they've got to sit and watch the movie in.
The spot which is the closest to getting your bucket refilled with popcorn, right?
Yes, right. Exactly. Or if you're Siskel and Ebert, they like to be right at the back. They liked to be right at the back of the theater during Sundance so they could skedaddle to their next film when the film ended. So we're doing that. And then we're also improving the sight lines by staggering the seats. And the way that they do this in modern theater design is that they alternate the width of the seats. So currently our seats are 12 inches wide. We'll have seats now ranging from 21 inches to 24 inches. And so they'll be staggered throughout the theater, which will then allow a half seat offset so that you won't be staring directly into the back of the very tall person inevitably sitting in front of you, but you can look between the shoulders of the folks in front of you and get better view of the screen, which of course is helpful for everyone, but particularly if you're looking at something like subtitles for foreign language films or open captions for the deaf and hearing impaired. And then what's also nice about having these different widths is that, people have different body types. Just going back to Jim Labreck from Crip Camp, his particular body type, he talks about it in the film, doesn't allow him when he's flying planes to sit in one seat, so he has to get two seats. So that someone that might need slightly more space, that would allow them the opportunity to select a seat that might be more comfortable than just having everything all the same. So we're really excited about just all the upgrades that we're going to be able to make. We're going to paint the floor. But over the course of the year, we've invested about $200,000 into the theater. So I do want to give a shout out to our sponsors who've made that possible. We did put in a new screen in the fall. But Utah Division of Arts and Museums, Utah Legislature, the Summit County Restaurant Tax, and Park City Municipal Corp. It would absolutely not have been possible without their help. And we are thrilled to be able to open up the theater again in June and showcase all the changes and upgrades that we've been able to make thanks to their support and really just elevating the level of the experience of the Jim Sandy Auditorium, not just for us but for Sundance and for any community event that's held in that space.
Right. Well, congratulations on a big project. Well, I should say congratulations on June 8th when you reopen, and that will be an exciting day. So Katie Wang, Executive Director of the Park City Film Series, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. ParkCityFilm.org.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thanks for tuning in to the Local News Hour here on KPCW Park City. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, sitting in for Leslie Thatcher, who will return next week. Just a quick look at the weather, 26 degrees here in Old Town Park City, lightly snowing, and snow showers are likely throughout today, a 60% chance, and then cloudy tonight, tomorrow a 40, then 70% chance of snow, and the high tomorrow 39. Today we'll be making it up to 34 degrees, and in the Heber Valley right now it is 27 degrees. Stay tuned now for National Public Radio News from Washington. followed by Cool Science Radio, kicking off with a talk about the science of the spring snowpack when we return.